Well, ladies and ladies, hello, more ladies here. Join us. You're not late. I was just wondering whether or not I should actually give the lecture. So, do join us. Welcome to Time, Tones, and Tentacle Terrors. I hope you will make some sense to you. Can I quickly check, does anyone here have any idea what weird fiction is? Anyone?
Horrible, something horrible.
Something horrible, okay. Sometimes, yes. Let's go with that to start with. Something horrible. So, there we go. So what is weird fiction? The term is normally used to describe a genre of speculative fiction, which is the same, it's a group we use to describe things like science fiction, fantasy, horror, some other kinds of literature. Weird fiction emerged in the 1920s as its own movement. A lot of the stories appeared in a particular magazine called Weird Tales, which is partly where the name comes from, and it's developed since then. It is strongly associated with the works of a small number of key early authors. The primary ones are H.P. Lovecraft, Clark Ashton Smith, and Robert E. Howard, but there are several others. Arthur Machen, Robert Bloch, who went on to write Psycho film, Fritz Lieber, and many others. Weird fiction existed before what we think of as modern genre fiction. Fantasy, mystery, horror, and science fiction did not exist as categories in Western literature at that time. And as a result, weird fiction is a blend of elements from all four and sometimes from other genres. It sometimes includes things like adventure, romance, detective fiction, depending on what the author is trying to achieve. So, what makes fiction weird? This is a quote from a famous essay called Supernatural Horror in Literature by H.P. Lovecraft. The true weird tale has something more than secret murder, bloody bones, or a sheeted form clanking chains according to rule. A certain atmosphere of breathless and unexplainable dread of outer, unknown forces must be present, and there must be a hint expressed with a seriousness and portentousness becoming its subject over that most terrible conception of the human brain, a malign and particular suspension or defeat of those fixed laws of nature which are only safeguard against the assaults of chaos and the demons of unplumbed space. That's the most widely accepted definition. Others are based around this idea. And as you can see, it's more of an approach to writing in many ways than a genre as such. In other words, a weird tale is built around atmosphere, emotion, and a sense that physical laws and reality cannot be trusted. And that sense is disturbing or overwhelming to the protagonists. In some kinds of stories, that results in actual madness, but more often it's simply a sense of unsettling atmosphere. The scholar J.F. Machin wrote that almost all accepted definitions of weird fiction are derived from this one. It has the benefit of describing the outlines that surround the genre without giving a rigid definition that would inevitably be inaccurate and exclude some people. It also makes it quite difficult to definitively say that any particular author is or is not writing weird fiction. So that's simply an aspect of the genre, even Lovecraft. So, what does weird fiction look like? There is an emphasis on short fiction, and the reliance on atmosphere and dramatic tension and things that are not explained is quite hard to maintain over a longer period. The genre typically minimises a lot of the classic elements. In a lot of types of fiction, we expect character and conflict to be central to the story. Weird fiction mostly neglects those to focus on atmosphere, but that does make it difficult to maintain interest over a novel, so novels are relatively rare. The stories that tend to be categorised as weird tales also draw on a number of elements that are different from earlier forms of horror and strange fiction, and those three are the basis for the name of the lecture, which I'll come to in a moment. Another important feature is that the fantastic elements of the stories are not usually explained away. It's distinguished from science fiction because the point is not to explore what would happen if a particular technology, and things are not explained away by logical rules. It's distinguished from a lot of fantasy because there are not rules of magic that tell the reader what they can expect and how these things will be dealt with. And it's distinguished from horror because creating that feeling of horror is not particularly the goal. It's more a sense of strangeness and satisfying bewilderment, you could say. Obviously, in some cases, people are writing overlaps with each of those genres. So, where did it come from? Weird fiction grew out of a mixture of existing traditions. You can see here, Gothic was the major form of supernatural literature at the time when it was emerging, and Gothic had become stereotyped and was losing its spirit. The authors drew on that. They drew on ghost stories, existing ghost stories, on the scientific romance genre, so people like Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, who were exploring strange scientific possibilities. And they also drew on the stories that were starting to be translated from the Middle East and from Asia, which includes the 1001 Nights, but it also includes some things like Chinese and Japanese classics. But it wasn't just a matter of literature. Weird fiction also drew extensively on science and other forms of scholarship. It took ideas from folklore that was being collected around this time, and from anthropology that was discussing previously unknown cultures. And in the sciences, people were inspired by these discoveries that were transforming what people thought they knew about the universe, and archaeological discoveries that disproved long-established Western beliefs about history, humanity, and civilization.
Excuse me?
Yeah?
By the way, what's a scientific romance?
Scientific romance is not romance in the sense of love stories. It's the older version, which is the idea of an adventure, which is where that comes from. So in German, it's still called a Roman, is the name for a novel. So it's romance in general meant fiction that was adventurous, exciting, melodramatic, and wasn't trying to teach you any moral lessons. And when it appeared in the 18th century, that was a big change from earlier writing, which was all any long writing was trying to teach you something about how you should or shouldn't behave. And there was a lot of conflict actually when the romance adventure genre appeared, and people saying it was worthless, it was bad for people to be reading these kinds of stories that weren't educational. But they also didn't like it because it was particularly popular with women, and they didn't really like women learning things. So, those 3 points I mentioned: time, tones, and tentacled terrors. In terms of time, weird fiction drew attention to the unimaginable vastness of time and of space and of space-time, which was being invented around then, and how, in comparison, the entire human race, let alone any single person, can seem insignificant when you're looking at an infinite universe and billions upon billions of years. The Western tradition, until very recently at that point, had agreed that the universe was about 6,000 years old, because that was what Christianity told them. But scientists had thought differently for a while, but this was the time when ordinary people were coming to accept this idea that it wasn't just this period of a few thousand years, it was vastly, vastly more, and that was very difficult for people to deal with in some ways. Victorian horror stories might involve events from a few hundred years earlier, but weird tales started drawing on those scientific ideas and linking the events of the stories to things that happened millions of years ago, billions of years, long before or long after humans existed. The idea of writing stories after the extinction of humanity, or after the death of Earth or the Sun, was also a very strange innovation. And I should have clicked those as I was going on, I'm sorry. So a really good example of a last kind, which is actually playing with the laws of time and space entirely, is one I love called Eater of Hours, Daryl Schweitzer, in which the characters find that time has actually more or less ceased to exist, and there is no longer any difference between their past and their future. They're trapped by this strange space-time phenomenon in this endless cycle of simultaneous action. And there's a nice picture of space-time for you. I'm trying to break it up so it's not just words. Part two, tomes. Tome is an uncommon word for book. It's not used at all in ordinary English, but it does get used extensively in weird fiction and in fantasy to mean old books, usually old books containing knowledge. Frequently, weird tales will involve the discovery of dreadful knowledge, either secrets or intellectual information written down somewhere. Sometimes the books were written long before humans should have existed, tying it back to that first point about time. Or they reveal that the writer is immortal or is not human. In many weird stories, the protagonists start to understand what is happening because they've discovered a written record somewhere. And they struggle to accept and to understand and to cope with the knowledge that they find. There are other books that are inherently dangerous and have supernatural power. The archetype for this is a book called The King in Yellow by Robert Chambers. Reading the book drives people insane and puts them under the control of a living city on a distant planet called Carcosa, and I'll come back to that later. But this idea of knowledge and art and literature is potentially dangerous. There's a tome for you. I don't know who the bearded chap is. Part three, tentacled terrors. Strange creatures are a very common feature of weird fiction. They're not necessarily antagonists. They can be, I've not come across any where they're protagonists, but they can be strange events or even allies in some cases. And one of the genre's traits is its refusal to neatly distinguish fantasy and science fiction. We're used to the idea that you have wizards and ghosts and monsters on one side and robots and aliens on the other side. And weird fiction does not do that. For example, the work of Clark Ashton Smith, one of the early famous authors, is full of creatures that are worshipped as gods by the people, that are always referred to in the stories as gods, and which are very clearly aliens. Just straight up aliens. The early writers tried deliberately to distinguish their new forms of supernatural writing from the Gothic horror tradition, which used a lot of traditional monsters like rats, snakes, werewolves, ghosts, demons that looked like humans. And in search of contrast, weird authors turned to less familiar forms of life. And again, this was partly inspired by scientific progress, people exploring the deep seas, microscopic experiments. And they created indistinct creatures that had slimy skin instead of fur, and had octopus tentacles instead of claws, eyes like insects, mouths like crabs. They drew on invertebrates and deep sea life and fungi, and started, for example, having non-symmetrical aliens, which we find particularly strange. We're used to everything being symmetrical, like us. But, for example, if you think of starfish, which are symmetrical in radial form, in a circle, as opposed to split in two. And creatures that don't have a physical form at all, like the colour out of space, Shoggoth, star vampires, there are all kinds of things in different stories. And here are some pictures for you of some of those tentacled terrors. This is, the one on the left is one artist's impression of a god creature called Chaugnarfawn. And the one on the right is an artist's impression of Cthulhu. Terrible creature. Yes, Lovecraft, some of the Lovecraft. Yep. Fan? You're a fan?
Colonel Woods.
Ha. Okay. I can question you later. There's another couple for you. I've no idea what the one on the left is, but it's a very, very classic weird tail monster. The one on the right, I believe, is Nyarlathotep, but I'm not entirely sure. But again, you see, that is very clearly part of an octopus. Another fact is that for many weird fiction authors, a lot of their writing was directly inspired by dreams, and some of their stories were actually retellings of dreams they'd had. Edward White wrote a lot of stories based on his dreams. So did H.P. Lovecraft, and they both talked a lot about dreams. The advantage was that because dreams are strange and illogical, that helped them to create that disturbing sense of things not working like they should. If you think about the way in dreams, you know, you can turn around and someone is turned into a different person, but that seems perfectly reasonable, and all this kind of thing. And those were the kind of effects they were trying to create. So let's have a look at some of those authors. As I said, the genre appeared in short story magazines known as pulps in around the 1920s. It's called pulp because that's the type of paper it was printed on, very cheap, low-quality paper. And it was aimed at an audience of general readers, not elite literary people. The one I've mentioned before, in particular one called Weird Tales, which published for about 20 years in the 1920s to 1940s, published a very wide range of different stories about anything strange. Nowadays we might class its contents as being science fiction or fantasy or supernatural or horror, but none of those genres existed at the time. So Weird Tales was this melting pot of different ideas. There were other magazines that published similar stories, but it was by far the most influential. One of the things about magazine work is that it tends to encourage writers to write a broader range, because the editors and the readers both expect novelty. If you earn a living by writing short stories for magazines, then you might well be able to publish two stories under different names in a magazine, or you might have to write for multiple magazines to earn a living. And so that pushed people to try writing different styles, writing different types of stories, so that you could include two in the same issue of the magazine. It also meant, because people were reading these magazines as well as writing for them, they were influenced by the other authors and often got to know them. And this influence and reading the other types of stories had a feedback effect. It encouraged people to incorporate some of these different ideas in their stories. The last story I wrote was fantastic, but I found this nice bit of science fiction I want to try, or some paranormal horror, some supernatural horror, Victorian spiritualism, this kind of thing. And because there was this demand for novelty from the readers, from the editors, it encouraged people to borrow ideas very widely. So if you could borrow an idea from another culture entirely, great, that was new and different. There's some Weird Tales covers for you. And you can see, pretty weird. Weird Tales was a kind of home for weird fiction, but the heart of the movement was a group of writers that is sometimes called the Lovecraft Circle, because he was the most well-known and influential person. These authors wrote for the magazine, but they also corresponded with each other to share ideas and stories, and they borrowed elements from each other's work. Many of the writers got to know each other through reading the stories and leaving comments through letters to the editor, the same way you'd leave comments on a blog these days. They were particularly notable for freely sharing their ideas. So people would take elements from another author's stories and use it in their own. They would readapt something, they would use a name but change it into something else. Or they would take an idea and try writing their own version in their own style and see how the story would turn out differently. Different interpretations. These are the top three names, as mentioned before: H.P. Lovecraft, Clark Ashton Smith, Robert E. Howard. But there were plenty of others who also corresponded with them. Some of them were almost apprentices to the earlier group. And most of these were men. It was mostly men writing these stories at the moment. But there were also a number of female authors. C.L. Moore wrote a lot of Weird Tales in a distinct style of her own. So let's have a look at some of those big names. Howard Phillips Lovecraft, the big boss of weird literature. His focus was on horror. As I said, he wrote this essay, Supernatural Horror in Literature. He spent much of his life as a recluse. He suffered from severe depression. And as a result, a lot of his stories are about people rather like him. People who live quite quiet lives, studying, reading old books, loving stories and old literature, and travelling around to look at architecture and other things of interest, because that's what he liked to do. Not always, but that was a very common time. And he very much is not a writer of characters. There is no character development in his stories. There is definitely no romance. There is very little interaction between characters other than explanation and dialogue. What he focused on above everything else was trying to create atmosphere, to the point when he would deliberately avoid having twist endings, so surprise endings, by flagging up earlier what the ending was going to be, because his emphasis, he very much wanted to just focus on creating the feelings, and that was his goal. He was the first person to express a specific philosophy of supernatural writing, that essay that I mentioned, Supernatural Horror in Literature, and I had a wide correspondence circle, people that shared ideas, that read and critiqued each other's stories, made suggestions, and in fact he made some of his money by ghostwriting stories for other people who had ideas but didn't have the literary ability to finish them. His primary focus was on horror and mystery stories and atmosphere. The other thing he did very extensively was mixing real and fictional places completely freely. So he would invent towns and cities set in Northeast America. He would incorporate his own invented, insane scholars and artists to mix in with real historical people, to create this sense of richness and verisimilitude, so the sense that something is real. His writing style is very verbose, lots of words, and it was deliberately archaic. He liked to write in an old-fashioned style. That makes it not very easy to read, but it does contribute to this sense that they can be older tales even than they actually are, that they were old even when he wrote them. He drew heavily on his own interests in history and science to shape his stories, and so the themes of a lot of his stories are knowledge, scientific revelations. His, as I said, mixing historical and imaginary places created what is sometimes called Lovecraft Country, this whole imaginary region of America where these stories take place, and several other authors have done similar things later on. Ramsey Campbell, for example. Place is a really important component of his work. You can almost say that the towns and countrysides that he talks about are characters, and they can often seem more substantial and interesting than the actual characters, the people in the stories. Unfortunately, he was also very classist and extremely racist, particularly in his earlier life and his earlier writings, when he was still particularly secluded, not having very much contact with the outside world. And that prejudice is obvious in some of his stories and seriously detracts from his work as a whole. And it's been quite controversial because his popularity has been increasing again and people have been discussing it more and more. He had this lifelong interest in science, and he published his own local scientific journal when he was about 8 years old, dealing with particularly astronomy and chemistry. He followed science news and he was inspired by it in a lot of his stories. He wrote one about mind exchange with aliens when a new star was discovered by astronomers, for example. And as a result, he was responsible for one of the main strands of weird fiction, which is what you can call scientific weird, things based around strange events with a scientific angle. He wrote a lot of stories dealing with the way knowledge and scientific discoveries can shock and disturb people. Things like evolution, genetics, the sheer size of space-time. And he really likes writing things about the ultimate insignificance of humanity in an infinite universe, which is often called cosmic horror. So the horror of space. Knowledge is a really common theme in his work. His longest work, At the Mountains of Madness, features Arctic explorers discovering the ruins of an ancient alien civilization, and learning terrible things about human origins. The festival, rats in the walls, facts concerning the late Sir Arthur Jermyn and his family, all deal with characters discovering old family secrets that completely destroy what they believe about themselves and their origins, and also drive them insane. Here is an extract from one of those.
The H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society presents The Festival, read by Sean Bray. If it you de vonis, ut quem su, sic tamen quasi sit, conspicienda, omnibius expedient. Noctantis. I was far from home, and the spell of the eastern sea was upon me. In the twilight, I heard it pounding on the rocks, and I knew it lay just over the hill, where the twisting willows writhed against the clearing sky and the first stars of evening. And because my fathers had called me to the old town beyond, I pushed on through the shallow, new-fallen snow, along the road that soared lonely up to where Aldebaran twinkled among the trees, on towards the very ancient town I had never seen but often called. It was the Yuletide. That men call Christmas, though they know in their hearts it is older than Bethlehem and Babylon, older than Memphis and mankind. It was the Yule, and I had come at last to the ancient sea town where my people had grown, and kept festival in the elder time when the festival was forbidden, where also they had commanded their sons to keep festival once every century, that the memory of primal secrets might not be forgotten. Mine were an old people, and were old even when this land was settled 300 years before.
So, that's H.P. Lovecraft for you. Our next candidate is very, very different. Robert E. Howard. His stories were full of adventure and violence. There's the ghosts again. And his key theme was the idea of barbarism versus civilization. And rather than atmosphere, his writing was all about trying to create energy and excitement. He started writing in his early teens and died at the age of 30, but he packs an enormous amount of writing into that time. His writing is full of enthusiasm and energy, this kind of youthful enthusiasm, and a really strong belief in the power of sheer determination and masculinity. His best-known work is Conan the Barbarian, and there's a film version with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He wrote a lot of adventure tales, which mix traditional action elements with the fantastic and horrific aspects of weird fiction. And in the process, he created a subgenre which is called sword and sorcery. He had a very different writing style from Lovecraft, short and efficient, to try and emphasize the action of events as much as possible. His life was substantially shaped by the arrival of oil companies in rural Texas, where he grew up. And he said, "An oil boom will teach a kid that life's a pretty rotten thing, as quick as anything I can think of."
The darkness was taking form. Something huge and bulky grew up out of the void. She saw a giant, misshapen head emerging into the light. At least, she took it for a head, though it was not a member of any sane or normal creature. She saw a great toad-like face, the features of which were as dim and unstable as those of a specter seen in a mirror of nightmare. Great pools of light that might have been eyes blinked at her, and she shook at the cosmic lust reflected there. She could tell nothing about the creature's body, Its outline seemed to waver and alter subtly, even as she looked at it. Yet its substance was apparently solid enough. There was nothing misty or ghostly about it. As it came toward her, she could not tell whether it walked, wriggled, flew, or crept.
I think that's enough of that. Although the key difference from Lovecraft is that after this creepy introduction, this monster will be brutally beaten to death by a man with a sword. That's how you know it's Robert E. Howard. Howard grew up in a rural Texas town that was dominated from his teens by the oil industry. He'd grown up with this idea of frontier life, sheer masculinity, and that was how he viewed his hometown. People struggling nobly against nature and hardship. And he was surrounded by gunfights, by lynchings, by fights with Native Americans, and by blood feuds between families that had gone on for years. A very violent kind of upbringing. But it was one that he saw as honest. People were straightforward about their emotions, their hatred, their violence. His experience of civilization was very different, and that came from these oil companies that arrived. The companies arrived and they brought money and city living. There was investment, there was development. The towns exploded to 10 times their original size. But as well as infrastructure and money, the oil companies also brought pollution and corruption and crime and deceit, deceitful business practices, a kind of thing that Howard hated. And it was a constant cycle of boom and bust. They would find oil somewhere, go out there, employ thousands of people, make a lot of money, and then the oil would run out and everyone would leave. And the towns would be deserted, the economies would collapse. And that fundamentally shaped Howard's entire view of civilization, that that was what it was, a cycle of short-term success and inevitable failure. And in the end, the only people who would endure were the people living this very rugged, heroic life of dealing with nature directly. He had a dark and cynical style of writing, inspired by wilderness story writers like Jack London in the 19th century, who'd written a lot about real life frontier or adventures set on the frontiers of America. He was also a fan of the ideas that were coming out around this time about Atlantis and other imaginary ancient continents. And so he included lots of these things in his work. Most of his stories are set tens of thousands of years in the past, in the good old days when men were truly heroic, basically. On to number three, Clark Ashton Smith. Isn't he soulful? He is again a very different author. He was not particularly interested in action, but more in strange things happening to people, preferably in ways that were ironic. He wrote a lot of stories about people who weren't particularly good. He wrote a lot of stories set in collapsing civilizations, or what's called the dying earth genre, towards the end of the life cycle of the sun. And rather than writing for atmosphere like Lovecraft, or writing for excitement like Howard, he was writing for straightforward entertainment, basically. Ashton Smith was a self-educated genius, basically. He grew up in the wilderness, the actual wilderness, not a small town like Howard. He lived in a small, remote cabin in the forest with his parents. He was a writer. He wrote poetry. He wrote fiction. He wrote non-fiction. He was a sculptor and he was a painter, and he was really pretty good at all of those things. He wrote primarily to make money to support his parents, and so he didn't have the luxury of writing for the sake of art or writing whatever he felt like. He carefully chose his stories to match what editors would buy, and he was very happy to revise and change them to suit the tastes of the time, which meant his stories are very varied. He'd write anything that could sell. His vocabulary is much more readable than Lovecraft's. It's more modern and less complicated in terms of structure, but he has a rich writing style and quite a lot of unusual words, but used in ways that are relatively easy to understand. And his stories are often focused on being humorous, but in a dark way. His characters are not heroes at all. I don't think there's a single Clark Ashton Smith story with a hero. Most of them are not trustworthy. Many of them are cowardly, and they're certainly not heroic. But they are usually likable. And you can enjoy their adventures even though they are evil wizards or thieves. A lot of his stories are quite morbid, we would say, so they deal with death, darkness, cruelty, with peculiar things happening to people for no obvious reason. And he was criticised at the time because his stories were not adventurous enough. He's also quite what we call tongue-in-cheek writing. He knows that you know, essentially. As I said, he had these gods of his settings, which were obviously aliens. He had the great wizard Ibon, mentioned in a number of stories, who never does any form of magic and manages to survive by having made friends with one of these alien gods and by persuading a lot of people that he's a powerful wizard. In the end, he ends up trapped on Saturn.
The Lord of Saturn, by Clark Ashton Smith. When Morgai, the high priest of the goddess Yaoundé, together with 12 of his most ferocious and efficient underlings, came at morning twilight to seek the infamous heretic Ibon in his house of black gneiss on the headland above the northern main, they were surprised as well as disappointed to find him absent. Their surprise was due to the fact that they had every intention of taking him unawares, for all their plots against Ibon had been carried on with meticulous privacy in underground vaults and soundproof vaulted doors, and they themselves had made a long journey to his house in a single night, immediately following the hour of his condemnation. They were disappointed because the formidable writ of arrest with symbolic flame-etched runes on a scroll of human skin was now useless, and because there seemed to be no early prospect of trying out the ingenious agony, the intricately harrowing ordeals which they had devised for Ibon with such care.
And that is a taster of Clark Ashton Smith, dark but with a kind of humour behind everything he writes. So, let's see where their inspirations came from. Would people like a break, by the way? Have a break. I'll come back to this anytime. Go on.
我穿羽绒服就热，就凉快了。嗯，好累。我吃一个橙子。我操！我都被看下去了。嗯，特别棒的雨水。
I feel like this is a good point to ask if anyone has any questions. And I've been talking a lot. Anything?
About this?
Yeah? Well, not doesn't have to be about things I've said, but about this topic.
About Alan Paul.
No. Anything in the whole topic.
Weird fiction,
yeah.
I think the China hasn't published much of the world fiction. I only read the Lovecraft and these writers you mentioned, they just I don't know about them because they don't have the Chinese version and also I think I want to ask a question about the new world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's the difference between the weird fiction and the new weird. It seems like the new weird just a science fiction happened in the urban areas with fantasies, something mixed. And I don't know why this can be a new genre. And
you're not the only one who's confused about new weird. yeah. Many people, including me, are confused about New Weird. I am going to talk about it a little bit later on, but as I understand it, the main difference is supposed to be that New Weird is more postmodern. I don't pretend to be very clear on what that means either. But something to do with using the tropes and the classic elements of weird fiction, science fiction, and fantasy, but to criticise those things and to deconstruct them, as opposed to just using them kind of uncritically. Very broadly speaking, I'm very much not an expert on that, or anything, really. I'm not entirely sure what the differences are supposed to be between old and new weird. I know some people still write weird fiction in the old style.
Isn't new weird fiction only the Jeff Vandermeer and
China Meerville.
His name is
Yeah, it was really confusing because I was trying to research Chinese authors writing weird fiction. And it's really difficult because any search you do brings up China Meerville, and I was trying to avoid that. But as you say, it does seem like there's very little Chinese work that's explicitly weird fiction, as opposed to science fiction, for example. I would agree with that. I have found some online short fiction that seems to be weird fiction, but My Chinese is not good enough to be sure. So,
Japanese, they got the weird fiction, but it's mostly the comic.
Yeah, lots of manhua. But there are some, like Asamatsu Ken, I know, Japanese author, and some people would say even Haruki Murakami. Murakami Haruki? I don't know. Murakami.
Norwegian wood. Norwegian wood.
Yes, Norwegian wood. Yeah, this one. Some of his novels, some people would describe as being on the literary side of weird fiction. I'm not so sure myself.
Like he's basically considered as a serious writer. So if he wrote something like the fantasy or the science fiction, so I searched on the internet, the people call this genre is slipstream.
This is where it gets very complicated. So you have slipstream, you have new weird, you've got magical realism, and honestly, I'm not sure what the differences between all of them are. Then you've got things like urban fantasy, which is a more kind of straightforward genre fiction version. Paranormal, all kinds of things. So these days, everything seems to have to be its own separate genre. It's too confusing.
Maybe just something they think the serious writer they shouldn't write the science fiction, and so they just created a new world to carry it.
I think there is a certain element of that, yes. There's still a lot of prejudice against people writing popular fiction, isn't there? So that will actually come up again when I talk about Zhuguai Chuanqi. This kind of thing. About, you probably know far more about than me, but yeah. Was there anything else? Any more questions, comments? Yes.
So there's one slide.
Thank you.
So there's one slide which is before the first big name, and I saw something like Peter. So this is why it's big. So I wonder if it's relating to politics sometimes. One of the posters, the main thing, the very wild one. Yeah, almost. Yeah, okay, before. Yeah, that one. Yeah, the very
wild.
I killed Hitler.
Ah, so this is one of the titles of a story in this magazine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I assume it was a time travel story.
Oh, so actually this is not related to the
weird
fiction at all.
It will be. So all of these are a mixture of different types of story. Here we've got a giant robot. We've got some kind of mind control demon. We've got a wizard with a plant lady and a strange creature. And one of the stories in this seems to be time travel, where someone changes time by killing Hitler before the war happens.
Before the war.
I think that's the idea.
Yeah. So actually this one, the microphone is quite recent. Basically after the Second World War.
So 1930s and 40s. So I think this one is either during or shortly after the war.
Thank you.
That's okay.
I'm curious about there is a new form called TRPG, so game.
Tabletop RPG.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm curious about whether this can call a new form of fiction.
Yes, I think so.
They can offer more rich experience.
Yeah, because it's an interactive experience and you're building up something between a group of players. Yes, absolutely. And several of the big Western TRPGs were directly inspired by weird fiction. Dungeons and Dragons, for example, was very much based on pulps-like weird tales, science fiction and fantasy magazines, and not so much on fantasy novels. So that will also come up later on. But, yes.
The website called the SCP, they write all kinds of this.
Secure Containment Protocol.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's very strange. I have read it sometimes, and it's what we call a rabbit hole, because once you start reading, it's very hard to stop. You always find something else. I'll just read one more page, you know. It's like a wiki, any wiki, you know, you always have, oh, there's a link here, I'll follow this. But yeah, there's some really interesting ideas on there, and you could call that a new form of weird fiction almost. Some of those are narratives. I think you could argue that it's a new collaborative form of weird fiction, which is very much in the tradition of working together to create these shared kind of imaginary universes where elements are shared between different authors. Anyone else?
Well, Harry Potter, not Prince Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Harry Potter, I mean, in Western culture, is it science fiction or weird fiction?
Fantasy.
Fantasy.
Very much fantasy.
Okay.
Yeah. Very broadly speaking, science fiction is distinguished from fantasy because normally science fiction is exploring an idea, what if we had this technology, or what if science was different in this way, and the science and the differences behind it are a big part of the story. Whereas in fantasy, there is magic and monsters, but the story is not about magic and monsters, it's about people's actions. Very, very broadly. Super, super brief version. People have written entire books on that topic. But that's broadly it. So we wouldn't call Harry Potter weird because it's not really designed to explore feelings and atmosphere or to leave mysterious things, loose ends for the reader. It wants to tell you what's going on. It wants to explain things.
I see. So actually, weird fiction is kind of, even if you finish the book, you don't know what it is.
Quite often, yes. You're not quite sure what was going on. And quite often, you're not sure whether something really happened.
Wow.
So unreliable narrators are a big feature of weird fiction. You're not sure quite how accurate information is that you're getting from them. So a lot of them are first person for that reason. Either deliberately written in the I did this, I did that style, or they very closely follow specific characters, whereas more general fantasy science fiction tends to write several different characters and it doesn't tend to have such a close relationship to the character's own thoughts.
I mean, those stories about weird fiction. You know, after I finish a story about it, I don't know any. I get nothing, and I wonder what happened or what's the result, and I don't know the main idea. So does it make sense?
So is that your experience of reading weird fiction, or is that?
No, before listening to your lecture, I had no idea about weird fiction.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so I don't got the main idea. I don't got the point about the weird fiction. I don't got the value of the weird fiction.
Hmm. Yeah, so it's not a case of you shouldn't have any idea what's happened, but you can't you don't get definite explanations of most things. You might guess. So normally you have some reasonable guesses what's been happening. But, for example, you might not be sure, did this person really do this thing because they were influenced by a strange kind of ghost? Or was it that they wanted to do it and they imagined the ghost having this influence on them, for example?
So this kind of story can help make people more creative, imaginative.
Yeah, there's a lot of imagination and leaving room for the person reading the story to think for themselves and wonder about what's happened. Very generally, I mean, there's a wide variety of them. As I said, Robert E. Howard stories mostly are weird because they have the right kind of monsters in and try to create a kind of creepy atmosphere where they're not fighting things. Whereas Lovecraft stories are very much, here are some strange things that happened to these people. And I'll talk in a minute about Robert Chambers, and his work is particularly strange because half the characters are actually mad. So it's a bit more complicated than that, basically. That's the answer to all questions. It's a bit more complicated than that. Yes, very much so.
After her question about Harry Potter, I had another question.
Yeah.
Is Dracula a fantasy or a weird fiction?
It's horror.
Horror slash weird fiction.
Kind of weird fiction.
Yeah, it's before weird fiction, but it was mentioned by Lovecraft as a big influence because a lot of its emphasis. Yeah, Bram Stoker. A lot of his emphasis is on the mood and trying to create the feelings in the person reading it. This sense of a threatening atmosphere. There isn't actually very much action.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't that many things that happen that are specifically scary. But the writing of the book is supposed to kind of overwhelm you and create all kinds of sensations.
And my second question is to do with feelings. What if I felt shocked or threatened by those weird fictions? What would be your advice? Should I read it or not?
That depends whether you enjoy feeling shocked or frightened. So, for example, I do not read actual horror because I don't like being made to feel shocked or genuinely scared or disturbed by something. I like weird fiction because for me, generally, it is a good border of something interesting and weird happens, but I don't actually feel bad. But some people really enjoy the feeling of safe, like a safe way to experience those feelings of bad emotions. They find it cathartic, so it helps them kind of release the tension from some of those feelings. But me personally, no. So you have to decide whether that's something you personally enjoy, I think. I would generally always say if you don't enjoy doing something, it's best not to. Hello.
Just really quick, to follow up on her mentioning Dracula, how about Frankenstein? How would you categorize that?
I personally would tend to say that is becoming weird fiction. Again, it's a bit too early. It's not as dedicated to that idea. It was more focused on exploring the consequences of creating life, what that might mean. But there is no hard and fast boundary, and I think that's very much on the boundary of weird fiction. And it is actually one of the inspirations, again, that were mentioned by some of these authors.
Are there elements of sci-fi?
Absolutely, okay. Yes. Okay. It has been considered the first science fiction novel. Mm-hmm. So, It was really groundbreaking at the time it was being written. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Go on. We can skip the second half of this lecture. We can just ask questions. This is great.
I have one.
You have a question?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's weird, so it is weird. So, I mean, in terms of the writer who, yeah, okay, wrote the weird fiction, so does he or she have a clear idea, I mean, how to explain the weird situation in this novel? Or maybe, I mean, kind of, okay, so I know this is hard to answer because, yeah, I think it's depending on different writers, but I mean, generally speaking, I mean, do they have the general idea, or maybe they are very confused? Thank you.
I would say it definitely depends on the writer. Some writers like to have a definite idea that they understand so the rest of the story will be consistent, even if they don't reveal the details to you. So the surface of it makes sense if you know what's happened, but they don't tell you what's happened, if you see what I mean. But there are other writers who sort of almost wouldn't understand that question, and their stories are deliberately ambiguous. They're not, some of them are actually not very interested in what really happened, in the sense that we normally think about. They're interested in, does the atmosphere work correctly? Does this create the right feelings and the right dramatic narrative that I'm looking for? And there doesn't have to be a solid, logical explanation for it, even a fantastic one. Does that make sense?
Kind of the weird sense.
Makes a weird sense. I suppose that's appropriate. Anyone else? No? If you do think of anything, please feel free to just shout at me and I'll look up and talk to you, okay? I will talk for 90 minutes, but if I don't have to, that's great. Right. I say that, we've only got 20 minutes left. So, where was I? I've done all of these. Edgar Allan Poe. Yes. Poe was one of the major direct influences for a lot of the writers, because he revolutionised writing about horror, essentially. He inspired people ranging from H.P. Lovecraft to the Japanese author Edgar Allan Poe, who you may just about be able to work out stole his name directly from Poe. Although the style of things they wrote were quite different. What he did differently was trying to write a neutral kind of fiction. A lot of gothic fiction was very moral based. Bad things happen to people because they've done something wrong. And that what happened to people in the end would depend on their own morals. They were trying to fit in with what the public would generally accept in terms of what was morally appropriate. And a lot of the time, there's what we call the authorial voice, so you can almost hear, or you can actually see, what the author is telling you and saying. And as you see, dear reader, the virtuousness of our heroine allowed her to escape from such and such a dangerous thing. It's not always that blatant, but there were very... Gothic fiction is very inclined to try and teach you something. Poe was not trying to do that. He wanted to entertain. He avoided things like traditional Gothic monsters and anything explicitly Christian in general. And there are a lot of purely psychological elements, like the telltale heart, which, or the black cat, which is fundamentally just about someone thinking. He also wrote a lot of weird poetry, which inspired later authors. Undersea cities full of dead people, or Arabian ghouls up in towers ringing huge iron bells, and these sorts of ideas. Robert Chambers, I also mentioned. He was primarily a romance author, but he contributed some very important things to weird fiction with a handful of stories that he wrote. He established a tradition of borrowing elements from another author, in his case, the author Ambrose Bierce. He took names that appeared in some of Bierce's stories and reused them for his own very strange stories. And he also reused elements between his own stories to create links that didn't exist otherwise. Some of the same names would appear. He added extra detail to some of these ideas. And that created this sense of richness and hidden history that the reader can sort of fill in for themselves, just as the other authors in the Lovecraft circle borrowing from each other does. And that is actually part of the inspiration for that tradition, was Lovecraft and others borrowing from Chambers in turn. And he also introduced, you may remember there was this scientific strand of weird fiction based around H.P. Lovecraft. And there's what you can call a supernatural strand, more about ghosts and psychic influences by some of the less famous authors. And Chambers added what we can call the artistic or decadent strand of weird fiction, about art. He particularly created the idea of dangerous literature as a supernatural threat. I mentioned the book The King in Yellow, and that was inspired by things that were actually happening in culture at the time, when certain types of literature were being described as genuinely dangerous. Things like Salome by Oscar Wilde was published, and there was a great deal of criticism, condemnation, and people saying the works were bad for people's morals, that they would actively undermine society. Well, Chambers exaggerated that to a huge extent and created The King in Yellow, a book which literally drives you mad and corrupts you, makes you into something that is not quite human anymore. His prose is particularly chaotic, doesn't always make logical sense. And a lot of the time he uses unreliable narrators so that the person reading the story doesn't know whether something is actually happening. And he uses that to particularly good effect in a story called The Repairer of Reputations, probably his best story, really, really good. He also, in the shape of Carcosa, which I mentioned, this city on another planet, which you access by reading The King in Yellow, he created this idea of an other world, which is not fairyland, it's not heaven or hell, it's not a parallel dimension, as you might get in science fiction, but it's another world that exists in poetry and in madness. Which is a very different kind of concept. Arthur Machen was another contemporary writer. He wrote stuff that was much more influenced by folklore, but in a contemporary background, set in London or set in the Welsh countryside, with incredibly ancient creatures that could breed with modern people, and that directly inspired some stories like The Shadow of Innsmouth. He made a lot of unexplained references to things like rituals and creatures, and again, that is that not explaining things is one of the core attributes of weird fiction. And he explored ideas about the mind, obsession, memory, madness. For example, in a novel called The Hill of Dreams, also very good. Lafcadio Hearn, I mentioned that Eastern influences were also important, and this is the chap who is partly responsible. He was mostly brought up alone and self-educated by reading, so he read a lot of Greek classics. Later in his life, he moved to Japan and became a Japanese citizen. Koizumi Yakumo. And he introduced Japanese folklore and culture to Western audiences who previously knew nothing about them. So he was very influential. His writing encouraged other authors in the West to think about literature and supernatural and culture in different ways. And he also encouraged them to expand away from the very familiar themes that they were used to, the ideas, and start playing with these ideas from other cultures. He also provided a new kind of other for writers to talk about, this essentially Asian, East Asian cultures that were exotic to people, that were not known and could be contrasted against what was familiar. And obviously that has good and bad points. It allowed people to write interesting story, but it also contributed to the idea of treating people in, well, in Asia specifically, as being fundamentally different. For the people who weren't like Lafcadio Hearn, actually experiencing them, only reading about them, there could be this sense of, look at how strange everything is in these countries. And certainly some writers deliberately exploited that way of thinking. We've got Lord Dunsany, Edward John Morton Drax Plunkett, the 18th Baron of Dunsany, specifically. He went by Lord. He was considered one of the greatest English language writers of the period. He wrote a huge number of fantastical stories at a point when fantasy did not exist, and he is one of the origins of fantasy as a genre. He created his own mythologies and pantheons to set stories in, but he wrote a huge variety of styles, from this kind of mythic style through to folklore stories and whimsical comic stories of strange thefts going badly wrong and things like this. He was a huge influence on some major fantasy writers like Tolkien and Lovecraft, on Ursula Le Guin, if people know. Darkness, yeah, Left Hand Darkness, exactly. They've all said he was a major influence. And those are some of the illustrations from his stories. These are particularly interesting because in this case, he got his friend, Sidney Sime, to draw pictures. Then he wrote stories based on the pictures. So the stories these are based on, The House of the Gnolls, I can't remember what this one's called. That's the outside, I think. They're all full of strange little details, and Dunsany was trying to find ways to incorporate them in his stories. which created this huge creativity exercise for him and made those particular types of stories very strange, but very interesting. But there are older inspirations as well. Gothic literature was obviously a huge influence, and I will skip over it because we're very close to the end of the lecture. Wuthering Heights, because of the psychological elements and the hints that Heathcliff is not even human. Frankenstein, which explored scientific and spiritual ideas, as well as the theme of what is family, what is human, who is human, and what does that mean? There was classical Western literature, which was full of strange things happening, because the Greek and Roman authors were very interested in fortune-telling. A surprising influence, you might not think about, is Scandinavian legends, because they did not have good versus evil as part of their worldview, their mythology. Scandinavian literature is about order and chaos, and that is very much a theme in a lot of weird fiction, that humans exist in this bubble of order in a huge sea of chaos, and that any order and control that we can have is only temporary and will eventually fail. Got the 1001 Arabian Nights, which appeared in the 18th century, the late 18th century. That freely blended ordinary things, religion, adventure, science, has a robot flying horse, for example, and supernatural elements like genies. And again, this was a new source of unfamiliar ideas and a huge inspiration. H.P. Lovecraft was a massive fan. A lot of his own writings contain ancient Arabic locations or books, and he has an Arabic alter ego called Abdul al-Hazred, who appears in some of his stories. We have Zhuguai Xiaoshuo. You know more about this than me, to be honest, but this was also an influence. These were intended for literate readers, and for their interest, but they were very much about collecting strange things that were happening. By the early Qing dynasty, Judith Tightlin suggests that these accounts were starting to seem stereotyped, and that writers like Paul Songling were trying to renew the genre, which is the same thing that the weird fiction circles were trying to do with horror and with these other kinds of fantastic literature. Refresh them, regenerate them. I really don't have time to go through this, I'm sorry. But, yes, which of the remaining topics would you like me to cover in the last few minutes, or would you like to ask some questions? Anyone? We don't have time to cover everything I was going to. So I can quickly cover the revival of weird fiction, the end of old weird fiction, pop culture nowadays.
I have a question.
Yes?
Yeah. So I know there is kinds of the songs in Britain, which are kinds of the persuade babies to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there is a, I don't know if it's a genre or not, so it's kind of the weird songs for children to rock them sleep. So, don't you know that?
I don't.
Okay, so I know one that's kind of, okay, so I cannot remember the lyrics, but something like, okay, an old man, blah, 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 and then come back home, and then the next day, the following day, no one found him. This is one of the songs. I think maybe it's quite related to the weird fiction.
It could be. I know some of our traditional songs are quite strange.
Yeah, I know there is a category which are all about these kinds of strange songs. For babies to fall asleep. And you can imagine, no babies can fall asleep. with this kind of really horrible songs.
She read about this folklore. She wrote the book about the folklore in the world about the every nation. Angela Carter, I think her name. And she wrote in that book, I found in every country and every almost every culture, they always have some horrible stories, some bad stories, and something is very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's people are just really interested in things that they can't explain, I think.
Maybe people just like Lovecraft, he said the people is afraid of the unknown things, and this made people just interested in it, and it's just about the human nature.
I think it's such a widespread phenomenon, but I do think there is something fundamental in humans that we all seem to
want to know something hard.
Yeah. I think it's maybe partly a safety element, like we were saying about horror, where if you hear stories about strange and horrible things happening, but you know it's not real, that there's a kind of, it's a kind of second-hand way of dealing with those things. But I don't know.
Which genre is now the most popular in the West? The horror, the subgenre of the horror fiction, which is most popular?
Subgenre of horror that is most popular. That's difficult partly because I'm trying to think what counts as subgenres of horror. There seems to be a lot of interest in what I might call realistic horror, so more focused around psychology, on humans doing unpleasant things to other people, so serial killers.
The status of man, that's kind of...
Yeah, that sort of thing seems to be quite popular in the last few years. Can't say for definite, but that's my feeling.
I want to ask her that the most of these genres are just mixed, so there's a fiction, for example, like the Carrie by Stephen King, and this is about this is the horror fiction, but so we can say it's a horror fiction. Also, it's a witch, the horror of witch, and the supernatural horror. Yeah. Also, psychological horror. All these things they just mix. So
yeah, I think in terms of genre, I think the only useful way to think about it is they're kind of rough circles. And nothing ever just fits into one of them. Every story is a blend of different genres and subgenres and moods and other aspects, but it's just that some are more concentrated in a particular area than others. I agree. I'm not sure I could identify a single story that was only supernatural horror, for example.
So I want to ask you, do you feel frightened or shocked when you read our Chinese horror fiction or the Japanese or Asian horror?
I've got to say, I haven't read any Chinese horror fiction. My Chinese reading is not good at all. It's true. I can very slowly read stories for children. So,
all the films. Watch the horror films by the Asian country?
I haven't really watched very many films in the last few years. And as I said, I tend to avoid actual horror.
So I tend to be more likely to watch fantasy, science fiction, kind of more general. There isn't very much that I would call weird fiction in film. Weird is about as horrific as I like. So things like Lovecraft, Clark Ashton Smith, maybe Ramsey Campbell, Blair Barron, some of these more modern people. But once things start to be actually unpleasant, I don't like them anymore. So basically, I'm confident that if I did watch Chinese or Japanese or read those, I would be scared, yes.
Do you think this impacts something like the cultural barriers? Where is this Western novels? And sometimes I don't feel very shocked. But when I read the Eastern ones, I feel, oh my God, it's weird, it's evil. And I feel just shocked. But the many of the Western novels, even the Stephen King, those things, the Aaron Levin, this, I don't feel very threatened. Mm-hmm. Even the films, if it's not, except the body horror, this disgusting things, I feel shocked. But the psychological things, I think it's horror. But something like the witch, the vampire, I don't think it's something.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think supernatural horror is generally less scary, just in general, partly because it's so unreal. So, you know, things like body horror and psychological horror, because those are designed just to focus on that element. And though, you know, and obviously your body and your mind are so fundamental, I think it's easier for those to scare you. And I think there is much more of a cultural dimension to things like supernatural horror, as you say. So that doesn't surprise me.
We should try some Chinese supernatural.
Supernatural is fine. I don't like horror. I just don't. Oh, I'm too squeamish. Anyone else? I will be doing two more lectures, and what I will probably be doing is using the second half of this one for the next lecture, because we haven't finished it. But also, if anyone wants to stay in touch with me, you're welcome to do that, and you can get my contact details. I would be very happy to talk to you more about all of these things, particularly TRPGs. We need to talk. Yeah, how about you ladies? Any questions or comments?
Actually, I have a question, but not about fan fiction. I want to get some information about your university, the University of Durham.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, I'm a junior now, so I'm going to apply for this university for the Master of Education. So I'd like to listen to your advice about it.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's why I came to your lecture.
I won't tell you. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Let's exchange contact details.
Yes, about some details about the subject in education, because I know different universities have different arrangements about it.
Yeah, we can definitely talk about that.
Okay. So actually, I don't know much, so you can say just whatever you want.
That's fine. Yeah, is it okay if we arrange another time to do that?
Okay.
Is that okay with you? Yeah, okay, so, yeah. Can you get my WeChat details afterwards?
Okay.
I'm very glad. That's fine, I'm always happy to talk to people about things. Anyone else? Anything else? Okay, well, I think I've overrun by 10 minutes anyway. Yes, please feel free to go. Just be honest. How much of that was much too fast? Was that far too fast?
Yes.
Yeah. Was the speed okay?
Yes.
Okay, because that's one of the things I was obviously concerned about. This is actually my first lecture ever. So normally I just teach. So yeah, it's a bit hard to decide exactly how much content to put in and how fast to do it. Right, well, thank you very much for coming. I thought I wouldn't have an audience for a while, so that was nice. You don't count. Not for audience. But yeah, thank you very much. Anyone who wants my WeChat can get it.
Because
I'm
too slow.
I know the feeling. Yeah, it's so difficult when you're trying to read another language.
Actually, I'm going to talk about the horror fiction to my boss. I made a PPT and I had to do the presentation, and I found it's very hard to at least some genres, and I found it's very hard to find a book that can represent this genre because it's all mixed and I can't and
yeah, absolutely. And really, you can only use really small extracts from things. It doesn't give. You have to read a short story or a large amount of text before you really appreciate it. Yeah.
I was about to talk about science fiction, but I think about all this. Kind of the different punks, and some of it's hard to pronounce it, and I just gave up the science fiction.
Yeah, for example, I've got a book which is specifically steampunk weird fiction. Just steampunk weird fiction.
No, there's a Chinese writer, but he wrote in English, his Liu Kun, I don't remember his English name, and he wrote a new genre called the silk punk.
Oh, I've heard of that, I've not read any, but...
I think, as a Chinese, I read that book and I feel so ashamed because that it's not so punk, it's fraud, that book is... His short stories are very good, but that long book it's a copy of our history.
Called Akutagawa Ryunosuke. I found one passage written by him. I don't know if that's a weird fiction, but it's really weird. And
okay.
Called Shikoku Hen.
picture?
The picture of hell.
Oh, okay.
I love it very much. It's really, it's very weird and scary for me. But is that a weird fiction?
Potentially. I don't... Some people are really fussy about definitions and genres, and I think that's not very constructive, because all we're trying to do is describe things. So I think it could well be weird fiction, regardless of period, because if they're trying to do those things, to have that sense of atmosphere as the key focus of the fiction, that I think it totally is.
That's a Greek Japanese. His novel, one of his three short stories, was adopted into a film by a very great Japanese director.
Mm.
And that film, that is pure art. And I think you can watch it. It's pure art.
Can you send me a name of it? I'll forget.
The
Chinese name is fine, any name, because I can search for it and find it.
Red.
But, yeah, I was going to say, okay, I'm not going to make you talk about it just to find your seat, but if I get the time, one of the things I'm supposed to do here is research the intersection of... Oh, quite
long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, is it quite long?
Ghost discussion.
I didn't realise it was a film version.
Yeah, I love that story.
Very, very hard. That is one of the very few stories that's been translated into my family's native language, which is not that easy. Yeah, it's a small regional language in Britain. So yeah, it's a small island. But yeah, this particular set of stories has been translated as well. I've read that version.
Because Moonin's story, I think most of our art is not horror, some of it just a fantasy, like something we will send on a WeChat.
Strange, but yeah.
Some of it was adopted into a Wuxia film, like A Touch of Zen.
Mm.
A Touch of Zen is one of the greatest Wuxia films.
Okay, I need to account for that. Yeah, that's him. No, I thought you are.